Well, Lady Gaga says she's a Christian woman and that Vice President Mike Pence represents the worst kind of Christianity. Oh, I've got some comments on this today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Okay, this is not Bash Lady Gaga Day here on the Line of Fire. But I do have a lot to say regarding her comments about Vice President Pence and his wife Karen as if they represent the worst kind of Christianity and she is a champion for real Christianity. I've got an article on that as well. Lady Gaga, you were born this way, but you need to be born again. Born this way, meaning born a sinful, fallen human being like the rest of us. We'll be talking about that, a major decision by the Supreme Court temporarily upholding President Trump's ban on transgenders serving in the military while the lower courts work out various lawsuits. Is this common sense, good for the military? Is this a blow against individuals? Is it transphobia? We'll talk about that as well. And we'll interact with a poll I did asking what you think. Are people born gay or are they born heterosexual? Is everyone born heterosexual? I mean, how's that work? 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884 is the number to weigh in. We're not just taking random questions on all subjects like we do some days, like we did yesterday, being a holiday and many of you are able to call in that normally can't call. But any comment, question on any of these topics, we'll be taking calls today. 866-34-TRUTH. Before that, I was sent a quote yesterday, a video clip. It was a white interviewer sitting with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in a church building, and he asks him a question, and King gives a very articulate response, but I want to play this for you first. First, this is the question from Dr. King's interviewer.
What is it about the Negro? I mean, every other group that came as an immigrant somehow, not easily, but somehow got around it. Is it just the fact that Negroes are black?
All right. Now, you might say that's a pretty tone-deaf question. And it's a good thing that Dr. King was not wanting to be sarcastic or ridicule the question. Because obviously, other immigrants came over in different situations and different circumstances. But of course, calmly and clearly, but forcefully, Dr. King responds. Here's the first part of his response.
White America must see that no other ethnic group has been a slave on American soil. That is one thing that other immigrant groups haven't had to face. The other thing is that the color became a stigma. American society made the Negro's color a stigma. America freed the slaves in 1863 through the Emancipation Proclamation of Abraham Lincoln, but gave the slaves no land or nothing in reality, and as a matter of fact, to get started on. At the same time, America was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that there was a willingness to give the white peasants from Europe an economic base. And yet it refused to give its black peasants from Africa, who came here involuntarily in chains and had worked free for 244 years, any kind of economic base. And so emancipation for the Negro was really freedom to hunger. It was freedom to the winds and rains of heaven. It was freedom without food to eat or land to cultivate, and therefore it was freedom and famine at the same time.
Now, when you hear that, it gives a perspective that perhaps many Americans don't think about. Look, there are Africans who have come over to America today, and they find themselves in a much better economic situation, life situation, than those that identify as African-Americans that have been here through generations. In other words, they are coming in without some of the societal history. They are coming in without some of the societal handicaps. They are coming in without some of the societal obstacles. By now, to a great extent, skin color is really not an issue in America, or certainly much less an issue than it used to be. An issue on a certain level, but certainly much less than it used to be. Yet to just compare immigrants, look, my grandparents came over from Russia as immigrants, and the next generation, my dad worked his way through college and ended up being the senior law assistant in New York Supreme Court, narrowly missed out becoming a Supreme Court judge. So it was the very next generation. There were not the same types of obstacles to overcome. And Dr. King, this was May 1967, does well to point that out to the interviewer. So yes, the color itself became a stigma, and the interviewer did touch on that, but the circumstances of immigration were far different. Okay, one more clip from Dr. King.
And when white Americans tell the Negro to lift himself by his own bootstraps, they don't look over the legacy of slavery and segregation. I believe we ought to do all we can and seek to lift ourselves by our own bootstraps, but it's a cruel jest to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. And many Negroes, by the thousands and millions, have been left bootless as a result of all of these years of oppression and as a result of a society that deliberately made his color a stigma and something worthless and degrading.
Yeah, I think it's hard to argue with those comments historically, and to the extent some of the issues still remain, be they through the welfare system, be they through other issues historically, whatever we can continue to do together to make a level playing field as much as possible. And look, this is not just a color issue. This has to do with poverty in general. That has to do with broken homes in general. A lot of people are born into this world with two strikes against them, and it takes an extraordinary individual to overcome all those obstacles. At least that should concern us together as a society. So yesterday on Martin Luther King Day, I only made one comment in terms of some of his quotes and some of his writings. I didn't address larger issues with that. I don't walk around feeling guilty that I'm white. I don't walk around feeling guilty that I'm middle class. I don't walk around guilty that I was born in the suburbs of Long Island, suburbs of New York on Long Island. I don't feel guilty for any of that. I'm blessed, grateful. But I always want to do my best to have a heart for equality, fairness, justice. You say, well, how in the world then could you stand with President Trump and ban transgenders from serving in the military? What a bigoted thing. What an ugly thing. Why do you have a position like that? Ah, it's not bigoted. It's not ugly. It's not transphobic or homophobic or biphobic or otherphobic. Nothing of the sort. Instead, it just has to do with who's fit to serve in the military and who's not. Many of you listening or viewing, you wanted to serve in the military, and that's commendable. Every person, whoever they are, that wants to serve in our military, that's commendable. We appreciate their service and their desire to help and serve the country. But they understand it's not about them. It's about the country. It's about military preparedness. It's about everybody working together. So there are all kinds of conditions that would stop you from serving in the military. I mean, a host of conditions. For example, if you're a diabetic, if you're someone that needs to have regular medication for a specific condition, if you are more prone to psychological disorders, any of those things would disqualify you from serving in the military. And nobody argues with it. I mean, a few people might say, oh, come on. But otherwise, you understand, because the military can't babysit. The military can't be dealing with exceptions. It has to be dealing with the rule. So someone, for example, that identifies as transgender, they are on hormone therapy for life. For life. That means that if they don't get hormones, it will have an effect on them, either physically or emotionally or both. And they could be on the front lines in a difficult situation, an extended period of time, unable to get their hormones. that's just like anyone else with a medical condition. The military shouldn't underwrite that, let alone have extra care and concern. What about the fact that those who identify as transgender have a much higher rate of suicide and depression even after sex change surgery than the general population? Someone like that is not fit, on average, to serve in the military. If it was any other psychological issue, they would be disqualified with similar types of statistics. And then the idea that the military should pay for sex change surgery, and then the fact you have someone, let's say, is a biological woman, physically a female, and now has sex change surgery to, quote, become male and is on hormone therapy, is that person still fully male and able to do everything that a man would do in the military? Or do you have a special exception, an exemption maybe, where they only have to pass a female test to serve with men? I mean, these are just questions to ask that we ought not be asking them, because that's not the military's responsibility. So I appreciate everyone who identifies as transgender who wants to serve in the military, but there's a good reason for the ban. All right, more on that shortly. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to the phones. Janetta in Indiana, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hey.
I wanted to comment on the Martin Luther King video you showed. He's exactly right, and the reason I will tell you is I grew up as an orphan, and my brother, when we got older, he decided to do a little bit of history of where we came from, and so he handed some of the material to me. I wasn't really that interested, but I did look into some of it, and because of our last name, it said that one of the vice presidents was our relative, which was John C. Calhoun. And, you know, he was involved in all of that with the nullification. Well, there's a lady who personally knew him who wrote a book, not to get into all of it, but she did make a comment in there that he was misunderstood, his reason for not wanting to let the African Americans go. And his reasoning was, is we were going to do them a greater injustice because they had been brought over here and become slaves, and they hadn't had the opportunity to be educated or...
Got it. Like, so they were, right, they'd be well-intentioned, of course, after free slaves, but did we look at it holistically, long-term? Fair questions. But thank you. Sorry we had to cut you off. Thank you for weighing in. Much appreciated.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I wrote an article, I'm just looking at now, July 26th of 2017, that was entitled, Why Christians Should Applaud the President's Ban on Transgenders in the Military. And of course, I have different quotes from different LGBT activists and others bashing the president's decision. Bruce/Caitlyn Jenner tweeted out, there are 15,000 patriotic transgender Americans in the U.S. military fighting for all of us. What happened to your promise to fight for them? I've got quote after quote from LGBT activists and ally bashing the president. But again, when you look at the number of physical conditions that would exclude you from serving in the military, medical conditions, emotional, psychological conditions, it's a wonder we're even having this discussion. The military cannot engage in social experimentation. That's not the purpose of it. The military can't waste money meeting the needs of those who identify as transgender. And the military has certain requirements for men and women. All right, so... Once more, it's good that the Supreme Court has upheld the ban. Again, this is temporary while courts work through discussion, work through other lawsuits about this. But it's good. Oh, and by the way, for those that are watching, it was a 5-4 ruling. And Justice Kavanaugh sided with the other four conservatives. So just for the record, there was disappointment about a vote. And was it, did he vote pro-life or not? Did he sell out? There's concern about that. We shall see how things play out. But here, Kavanaugh voted with the conservative majority, which is what I would hope in a case like this. 866-34-TRUTH. I want to quickly grab some calls tying in with the clip I played from Dr. King. We go to Texas. James, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I wanted to point out quickly, just in regards to the African-American experience, I think that it was more of a holistic approach, in the sense that they were denied their religion, their names, those things that make you a human being. And even today, when the African-American references themselves in regards to their last name, it's the name of their slave owner. And following slavery, there was institutionalized systems put in place to reinforce the dehumanization of the individual, which can have long-term effects. So I just wanted to make that distinction and point that out, that those are something, there's a lot of responsibility on the African-American and the community to better itself, but there are some longstanding obstacles in the way that still have not been dealt with.
Yeah, and that's where, sir, I think awareness is important. Look, I'll give you an example to be totally candid. I grew up when I was in New York City going in a school system. It was a totally mixed school system. One of my best friends was a black kid in the school. I mean, we're just like kindergarten, you know? And in that sense, we were pretty colorblind growing up in that environment. When I moved out to Long Island, my first organ teacher was a gay man, and he would come over with his partner, and they'd have dinner with us some nights. And then after that, so I grew up in a home that was anything but homophobic. And then my next organ teacher was a black man married to a white woman. So this is in the early, mid-60s. And I remember my parents telling me they lost friends, family members turned against them. So that was my organ teacher. So I grew up in an environment where racism was never an issue. And then as a believer, of course, working around the world with believers in other countries, and I've got some dear friends who are black pastors and leaders, and they never took on a victim mentality and weren't sympathetic to a victim mentality. But one of my callers, African-American caller a few years ago, challenged me, and he said, look, you understand the devastating impact of the Holocaust on Jewish people, and that's two generations back, but you still talk about it with modern Israel today, needing a homeland, a place where we can protect ourselves, defend ourselves. And he said, you think, okay, just, you know, slavery, that's way back. Why is it still impacting? He said, but look, first think of how many generations we were in slavery, and then how many generations after that there was segregation. So you're talking about anti-segregation laws only ending, this is what, 20 years after the Holocaust. So it just gave me a much more generational perspective, because the folks that I hang with and work with, they really don't like the victim mentality. They don't like when people just keep bringing up the past. However, where there are vestiges of the past that still affect us today, where there are vestiges of the past that corporately we should at least understand and better deal with, not in a guilt way, not in the way where this one is privileged and this one's not, but as you're saying, look at things more holistically. I think it gives better understanding some of the obstacles that have to be overcome, issues like racial profiling, things that you may experience more than I experience, those kinds of things. The more we understand them, the better we can all work together for the good of all. So I appreciate the call and the input very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, you are very welcome, sir. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, let me just say this last thing, and then we're going to move on. Do we all have blind spots? Would you agree that we all have blind spots? Would you agree that we don't know if we have a blind spot? Like, why do you turn to go into the other lane thinking no one's there, except you have a blind spot? You don't realize, I thought I looked. Well, you didn't look enough, because the blind spot was closer in. So I have many blind spots in terms of my own understanding, and I've been greatly helped by others, especially my wife, Nancy, people who have pointed out to me a blind spot or something that's tone deaf or something that's inappropriate, lacking compassion, wisdom. So I've learned, and I have many of these voices in my head. I can be preaching anywhere around the world, and maybe I'm going to make a comment. It's just kind of a little funny comment, and I'll hear Nancy saying that, not in the middle of a serious message. You don't want to do, I mean, that's not a tone deaf or blind spot thing. It's just kind of a reminder. Or, you know, I joke with my friend Dr. James White, you know, very theologically sharp, and we often spar on different theological issues as friends in the Lord. And you know, I've got his voice that's always in my mind, you know, when I'm addressing a subject. Are you being theologically clear? Are you being precise? Are you being fair? You know, that kind of thing. Or when I'm writing an article, you know, I have James Robinson's voice in my ear, you know, Mike, be compassionate. Michael, you're so compassionate, redemptive. Keep being compassionate, redemptive. So these are just life experiences and things where you grow and learn. So all of us socially, emotionally, interactively with others, we all have blind spots, and we're not aware of the blind spots until they come to the surface. And then you become aware and you learn and you factor that in. Look, a very different illustration, but relevant. I write, as you know, pretty much day and night. I'm always working on books. I'm always working on articles, writing day and night. And as I've written over the years, especially in the earlier years, editors would make certain corrections. Now, some I didn't like. Now, that's stopping my style. I don't care if it's grammatically correct. I don't like it. I want to write like this. But others like, okay, that's sharper. All right, that's a better way to use this punctuation or this conjunction at the beginning of a sentence, etc. So as I write, these things become part of my overall writing ability. So hopefully my writing is sharper now. Or writing articles, as I've been writing articles for years now. That's a totally different literary genre than writing a book or writing something academic, an academic article, etc. So hopefully my articles today are sharper. I don't mean necessarily better or more anointed, but hopefully sharper than they were just from a literary style than when I first started, because I understand the genre a little better. Okay, got it? So all I'm saying is, let's listen to each other. Let's listen to one another's perspectives. My life experience is different than yours. Therefore, my perspective on certain things is different than yours. When I take issue with LGBT activism, I've done it only after listening to hours and hours and hours and hours and reading pages and pages and pages and pages and having conversations to digest and understand as much as possible the position of those I differ with. So even in the midst of our differences, I can have compassion. And even in the midst of our differences, I can be sensitive to overstatements and hyperbole and stereotypes. So we, years ago, as a Line of Fire community, tackled really difficult, divisive issues. I don't know how many radio shows were able to do what we did, but we as a community talked through the issues from all our different ethnic and racial perspectives. Like the killing of Trayvon Martin by George Zimmerman and Zimmerman being acquitted by the jury and other volatile cases like that. We talked honestly and openly on the Line of Fire, did we not? And you gave me great input, many wonderful calls, and I was candid with you as well. And one of my kind of soundbite conclusions in terms of respective blind spots, that white Americans often don't see racism when it is there. And black Americans often see racism when it isn't there, based on both of our unique life experiences. So that cues me in to look extra. You're about to turn. Look over your shoulder extra. So in this case, listen a little more, be a little more sensitive. Realize that there may be something you're not seeing because of your life experience. Then to my black American friends, listen also and look again. Maybe it's not what you think it is. And this is a way that we grow together, because my goal is to love God with all my heart and to love you, my neighbor, as myself. To the extent I can understand your life and your experience, all the more can I love you as myself, because I understand myself decently well, right? But to the extent I can understand your life, your experience, then I can better be a neighbor to you. Does that sound like gospel? All right, we will be right back. Lady Gaga goes after Vice President Mike Pence.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know what's nice about having your own live radio show? You can just make a decision on the spot and do it. I think I'm going to give away another copy of my new book, The Power of Music, God's Call to Change the World, One Song at a Time. Don't call yet. I'll tell you when. But I'll tell you why I'm doing it. First, I love to give books away and bless people. It gives me joy, and it blesses me to know that you appreciate the book, in this case, my newest, The Power of Music, God's Call to Change the World, One Song at a Time. But Lady Gaga is in the news because of her comments about Vice President Mike Pence, also for her role in a new movie, A Star is Born. And in my book, The Power of Music, I actually document how she has written songs with a social and cultural edge, that she's not just a gifted singer and musician and songwriter, whether you like her or not, she's certainly gifted, but she's also a cultural icon. And for example, some of her songs address subjects like the shooting of Trayvon Martin in her song Angel Down, or Hollywood's obsession with women's looks and sexuality in her song The Fame, and in her song Born This Way, which, as I document in The Power of Music, set the record for the quickest song to reach 1 million downloads. It contained a very personal message. She said, "I want to write my This Is Who the Blank I Am anthem, but I don't want it to be hidden in poetic wizardry and metaphors. I want it to be an attack, an assault on the issue, because I think, especially in today's music, everything gets kind of washy sometimes, and the message gets hidden in the lyrical play." So she didn't want the message to be missed. What's her message? God makes no mistakes. So your ethnicity, color of your skin, sexual orientation, gender identity, that's how you were born. You're born this way. That's what she says. And she's written other songs, again, I documented in the Power of Music book, that have had a social cutting edge to them. When she sang at Super Bowl 50 the Star Spangled Banner, our national anthem, there was great celebration in the LGBT community among their activists, saying, yes, yes, this was great. One headline, Lady Gaga's fabulous super gay Super Bowl national anthem, campy, theatrical, and queer as blank. Lady Gaga's super gay, super patriotic Star Spangled Banner at the Super Bowl is a sign of the times, of changing, acceptant times. So this is the mindset, cultural icon. And I believe that whatever her own upbringing was, whatever her own experiences were, be it sexual abuse, be it other things, be it rejection, that she really does have a heart for marginalized and outcast, but obviously not based on biblical principles and not based fully on God's heart. Throughout my book, The Power of Music, I give examples of how music has been used for cultural change to get a message out. Here, I wrote a 700-page book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, 1,500 endnotes, documented every word that was controversial through the book. It's been read. It's had an impact. It's touched many people. It's gone to high places. It's gone to other nations. I'm blessed by that. But how many people got the message of Lady Gaga's Born This Way? For every one that read my book, is it 10,000 or 100,000 that got her message? So you understand the power of a song. That is some of the power of music. And through the book, I give historical examples. And of course, you can just go on Amazon and order it, or on our website, together with some key interviews we did with great music leaders, a great package that we have on our website. But throughout the book, I'm showing how music's been used to shape society and say, how could we use it? How could we use it even more? And then getting into the scripture, seeing what the word says. Okay, let me give away copy to caller number 8. Caller number 8, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Caller number 8, you get a free copy of The Power of Music. So let's listen to what Lady Gaga had to say. I don't have the soundbite. Let me read it to you, all right? This was just a few days ago, performing in Las Vegas. She said to Mike Pence, who thinks that it's acceptable that his wife works at a school that bans LGBTQ, You're wrong. You're the worst representation of what it means to be a Christian. She continued, I am a Christian woman, and what I do know about Christianity is that we bear no prejudice, and everybody is welcome. So you can take all that disgrace, Mr. Pence, and look yourself in the mirror, and you'll find it right there. Okay. First thing, there is the complete mischaracterization of the school at which Karen Pence teaches. It's a Christian school. It is not banning people, but behavior. That's all. If there is a 16-year-old guy and he's sleeping with his girlfriend and they're out and proud about it, they would not be allowed to attend the school, no matter how Christian the parents claim to be. We do have a winner, so thank you. Maybe we'll give away one more book before the show is up, but we do have a winner. Thanks. So if somebody was like me when I was 15 years old, heavy drug user, that person would not be allowed in the school. If someone says, you know, I feel attracted to the same sex, I don't like it, I don't want to act on it, I love Jesus, and I'm living a holy and clean life, well, of course you can come. Of course you can come. You're not excluded. But if you say, hey, I'm out and proud, and I got a partner, and we're sexually active, of course you can't go to a Christian school, a truly Christian school. Of course. Obviously not. In what sense, then, is it Christian? If not in more, doesn't morality matter in any way? And by the way, isn't it positive that Karen Pence is teaching at a Christian school? She's the vice president's wife. They don't need the money, I'm sure. She could go on a speaking tour and bring in a ton of money compared to teaching at a Christian school. And who knows if she's even getting paid to do it. You may know. I don't know. But she's not doing it for the money. She's obviously doing it out of love for the kids and love for teaching and education. I think that's very positive. Now, let's come at this from a different angle. What if you were, let's say we have a Muslim in the Senate, all right, or a Muslim in the House of Representatives. Let's say it's a Muslim woman, which we do have, the House of Representatives, right, Representative Tlaib. So let's say she has a husband, and the husband is a devout Muslim, and he is the principal of an Islamic school in D.C. Oh, he's in an Islamic school. They don't allow Christians in that school. They don't allow Jews in that school. Yeah, it's a Muslim school. It's a school for Muslims. You got to be a Muslim to get in the school. What would be the shock? They don't allow atheists in that. Yeah, it's a school for Muslims. It's a Muslim school. What's the big deal? Let's say it was an Orthodox Jew and a family member, the spouse, taught at or administrated an Orthodox Jewish school. Would there be outcry over that? What? They don't let that is a bigoted school. They don't let Muslims in their school. Why? It's a Jewish school. It's a school where you presuppose that the kids there are Jewish. It's not doing outreach to the community. It's a school for Jewish kids. Let's say you're a Christian parent and you've had it with public school. You've had it with the negative peer pressure. You've had it with faculty members being hostile to your faith and administrators being hostile to your faith and your kids getting ridiculed for their faith. And you've had it. And you don't have the ability to homeschool, but you do have the ability to send your kid to a Christian school. Okay. Are you sending that kid to a Christian school so they'll be around an equal number of kids that don't know the Lord, that are partying, that are getting high, that are sleeping around, that have all kinds of worldly values? Obviously not. That's not why you're sending your kid there. What about the faculty? Oh, I got banned from teaching at that Christian school because I don't believe the Bible is God's word. How prejudiced. That's not prejudice. That's Christian. It is a Christian school. How would you feel if you frequent an atheist website? We'll make this so far removed from a school, all right? Totally open. An atheist website, and they start running regular articles from me feature articles on issues of faith and Bible and morality, you'd have an issue with that website. You say, I'm going to that atheist website to get material that I agree with. I'm going to that atheist website because I want to hear from others of like mind. If I wanted to go to a Christian website or a Messianic Jewish website or a conservative moral website, I'd go there. Okay, how much more a school will you send your kids? Is it surprising that you want the faculty to be Christian at a Christian school, or Muslim in a Muslim school, or Jewish in a Jewish school, especially a religious Muslim school, conservative Muslim school, conservative Jewish school, conservative Christian school? When I say conservative, I mean morally conservative and religiously conservative, whatever that title may mean. Like conservative Judaism is not conservative. That's just a different word. Is that a surprise? Is that a bigot? No, that's just holding to your beliefs and values. Do you expect PETA to be run by people that are meat lovers? Obviously not. Do you expect PETA to be run by people who wear fur coats from animal skin? Obviously not. So you expect the administration and faculty to be Christian? Do you expect them to hold to Christian values? Well, yes, that's why you're sending your kids there. Now, some Christian schools have the outreach mentality. We let kids in who are not believers, but they have to live by certain standards. And if, for example, they're sexually active, heterosexual, homosexual, doesn't matter, they can't be part of the school. Or if they're engaging in substance abuse in an ongoing way and they don't stop, they can't be part of the school. But we welcome others in and we try to reach out to them. Well, many Christian schools do that. Many Christian schools couldn't even exist economically without opening those doors. It does dilute the overall atmosphere. But as long as you require everyone to live by certain standards, then others are sending their kids there to be in a certain environment that we believe in. So there is a media onslaught of misinformation. Why? Because there is a left-wing attack on the Christian faith. There is a left-wing attack on the Bible. And look, if Mike Pence was president, he wouldn't do a lot of the things that Donald Trump does, and hence would not have enemies because of that. But you better believe he'd have even other more aggressive enemies because of his Christian faith. We'll be right back. Shake the nation, change the world.
Change the world. It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, let's give away one more copy of The Power of Music. One quick request. If you have the book, if you've enjoyed it, post a review on Amazon. Even if you didn't get it on Amazon, post a review there. Folks constantly look. The book's new. We've got our first few reviews up. If you've enjoyed the book, post a review and tell a friend. Books ultimately get out through word of mouth. So if you enjoy it, share it with a friend. All right, 866-34-TRUTH, caller number 7. Caller number 7, 866-348-7884. So let me get back to Lady Gaga's comment. I'm a Christian woman. And what I do know about Christianity is that we bear no prejudice and everybody is welcome. So you can take all that disgrace, Mr. Pence, and look yourself in the mirror and you'll find it right there. Okay. Obviously, you could say, what? I'm a Christian woman? What are you talking about? You could point to some infamous videos that if I saw a second of it, that was a second too much. Yuck, what is that? I'm talking about the outfit, the et cetera. And there are certainly things that Lady Gaga's been involved with that you would say are on the dark side, not the side of light. Let's just put that aside and say that in her mind, she's Christian. Is that because of Catholic upbringing? Is it because of some more recent experience? But in her mind, she's Christian. So I want to address her from that point of view. And to say this whole idea that there's no prejudice, we bear no prejudice, this is not a matter of prejudice. This is a matter of saying God's ways are best. Look, I'm not prejudiced against a divorced person that, say, a believer gets married and then they say, it's just not working out. I could do better. And they divorce and want to remarry. I'm not prejudiced against someone. I say, I'm sorry, you're not able to remarry scripturally. I'm sorry that you messed up your life doing this, but you're married to that person you were married. You had no grounds for divorce. They're not an unbeliever who abandoned you. They didn't commit sexual immorality against you, etc. You have no ground. Just because you don't like the person so much now or things are not quite living up to what you expected, that doesn't give you the right to divorce. I'm not prejudiced when I say that. When I tell a Jewish friend, you need to believe in Jesus to be saved, to have your sins forgiven and be right with God. I'm a Jew myself. I'm not prejudiced, but I understand that God's made a way for forgiveness and that it's not each man to himself, each woman to herself. Of course, we do have a winner, so thanks for all your calls. We do have a winner, though. I'm not prejudiced when I tell a Muslim that actually you claim the Bible is distorted. I say the Quran does not have it right. I'm not being prejudiced. Here, am I being prejudiced if I tell you when it's raining outside that it's raining outside? Obviously not. Am I being prejudiced if you come in from the rain and you're soaking wet? And I said, you're wet. You go, I'm not wet. Am I being prejudiced in telling you are wet? No. Okay. So isn't the real issue is what is truth? What are God's standards? What's right in his sight? What's wrong in his sight? You say, but that like damns everybody. That's so cruel. That's so harsh. Your way alone is right. You could look at it like that. Except I didn't choose this way. I didn't create this way. Turn it around. Look at it in a different way. Every one of us is born this way, meaning born to sin. Every human being will sin universally. Every human being, well, you do not have to teach a human being to be selfish. You don't have to teach a human being to be greedy. You do not have to teach a human being to lie. You do not have to teach a human being to disobey. You do not have to teach a human being to lust. These things come naturally to us because we are a fallen race. We may not be held responsible for our sin or understand the difference between right or wrong until we reach a certain age. The Bible certainly talks about that without giving a specific age. But certainly, every human being is born fallen and flawed. Now, I did a little survey on Twitter, and I asked my Twitter followers, who, of course, are largely conservative, what do you believe, generally speaking? This is not absolute every case, but generally speaking, one, we're all born heterosexual by nature. So again, we're not talking about intersex or something like that where there's ambiguity. We're all born heterosexual by nature. Two, some are born heterosexual, others homosexual or trans, etc. Three, we're all born as sexual blanks and we develop based on culture and experience. Four, not sure. So out of just the few votes, we got 364 votes so far on this. The number one answer was number one. 74% think we're born heterosexual. That's the way we're born naturally. And then through other circumstances, which again, just in a short Twitter poll, I exhausted every letter I had for the question. Then through life experience or culture or whatever, can now have other attractions. Second possibility, some straight, some LGBT. Now, what's interesting is despite the massive media campaign that you're born gay, you're born this way, you're born transgender, etc., despite that, still the vast majority of people that relate to me on Twitter are not buying that. And there is no scientific reputable evidence to support it. Are people born perhaps with a propensity to go in a certain direction or more likely to go in a certain direction? Oh, yeah, yeah. No one's arguing that. But in terms of, quote, being born gay, no scientific reputable evidence for that. And then third choice, that people are just born sexual blanks, only 4% believe that. In other words, overwhelmingly, they believe we are born by nature heterosexual. In other words, if you put all new babies in a brand new environment, right? So they're all these babies are born, and let's say they're raised in a setting where you have a man and a woman taking care of them, but not relating to them specifically, like, oh, you know, old boys like boys' toys, girls like girls' toys, or dressing all the boys in blue and all the girls in pink. Let's say it's all kind of neutral, that just generically, as the kids are growing, that the vast majority of the boys would be attracted to boys and girls to girls. Okay, so that's still the preponderant belief. And then fourth option, not sure, 9% said that. Now, again, all I was asking, when I do a poll, I'm not trying to determine truth. I'm trying to determine, what do you think? That's what the poll is. What do you think? What's your viewpoint? What's your understanding? Not what's scientifically correct or true. But my point now is this. If it is clear in God's word that marriage is the union of one man and one woman for life, not two men, two women, or any multiple combination in terms of God's ideal. Polygamy is not even God's ideal. When I say not even, at least it's male-female, and there's the ability to procreate and the ability to join children with a mother and father, which is very important sociologically and for many other reasons. But God's ideal, if we can show clearly it's one man, one woman, and that marriage in his sight is not two men or two women or three or four or whatever, if we can show that, then it's righteous for us to hold to that, but to say, hey, God loves everyone. God loves this dying world to the point that, listen, he didn't condemn us in our sins. When I came to faith, I realized my big issue was not drugs. That was a big issue. That was a big issue. But it's pride, rebellion. There was something deeper. The drugs were just a manifestation of a proud, rebellious heart. Okay? So for sure, every one of us, to the core of our being, needs redemption. Every one of us, and you're listening to me, you're hurting right now, you know your life is messed up. You don't have to be a drug addict to know your life is messed up. You don't have to be abandoned by your family to know your life is messed up. You don't have to be homeless to know your life is messed up. You don't have to be suicidal to know your life is messed up. You don't have to be fighting off depression or in the midst of bankruptcy or cutting yourself because you hate yourself or you just can't feel and you got to feel something. You don't have to be in that state to know that you need God. But if you're in that state, all the more do you know you need God. Many conversions in prison are genuine because people realize, man, I made a mess of my life. Others are just convenient. Well, this will help me with parole officers or give me better standing when I get out, etc. But plenty are sincere because people realize, I hit bottom. You often don't have to convince someone in jail that they're sinners. Some other people are like, well, I wouldn't be a sinner. I'm a nice person. I'm a good person, even though they're totally selfish and self-centered and narcissistic and addicted to fleshly habits and things. Oh, I'm a good person. No, in God's sight, none of us are good. In ourselves, none of us. It's like this. Like I said to a rabbi friend in a debate one time, you can drown in 10 feet of water as easily as you can drown in 50 feet of water. In other words, if you're in over your head, you drown. So you may be relatively good compared to someone else. You may be like the one drowning in 10 feet of water. Maybe I was like the one drowning in 50 feet of water. Maybe someone else like the one drowning in 100 feet of water, but we're all drowning. We all have a death sentence. We all need help and mercy. God's heart is so big that rather than condemn us, he comes into our world. He sends his own son, bearing his very presence and image, into our world to pay for all the things we did. Can you imagine that? All our crimes, all our transgressions, all our evil. He paid for all of it. And if we put our faith in him, he gives us absolute forgiveness freely. Freely forgives and gives us a new heart and changes us on the inside out. Lady Gaga, that's what you need. That's what your followers and fans need. That's what we all need. If you realize that's what you need, go to our website, askdrbrown.org. Write to us and say, what do I need to do to get right with God? Askdrbrown.org. We would love to help.